WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, sitting in for Terry Gross. The first season of the animated television series King of the Hill is now out on DVD. Mike Judge is the creator of King of the Hill. There was a time in the mid-90s when many parents considered Judge public enemy number one. He was the man behind Beavis and Butthead, two trash-talking, metal-rock-worshipping cartoon characters who were stars of MTV programming and later of a hit feature film. King of the Hill aired on Fox. It's about a conservative-minded, decent, and utterly uncool guy who lives with his family in a small town in Texas and faces the bewildering twists of modern culture with the help of his trio of misfit pals. King of the Hill premiered in January 1997. Since then, Hank Hill has had to deal with his wife's Peggy's bid to become state boggle champion, his live-in niece's conversion to Christian fundamentalism, and his son Bobby being picked by Buddhist priests to be the next Dalai Lama. In 1999, the show won an Emmy for Outstanding Animated Program. Let's hear a clip from the first season. In this episode, Peggy has just been hired as a substitute teacher for Bobby's fifth-grade sex ed class. Here she is, standing in front of the mirror, practicing some anatomical terms.
Happiness. 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 Penis. I did it. Ovaries. Uvula. Uterus. Vagina! Hey, Hank, I just said...
I heard you. The whole neighborhood can hear you cussing.
It's not cussing, Hank, to say the name of a God-given body part.
Well, it is if it's a part of the body that was meant to be concealed by an undergarment. You're dealing with organs that people just don't want to know about.
Well, Bobby ought to know about them. We don't want him growing up as repressed as we did.
Sure we do. I'm drawing the line here, Peggy. My son is not going to learn this crazy crap. It says right here he can't take the class without permission of both his parents.
Now, just hold on. Are you saying I am not good enough to teach my own son?
If you do not approve, you do not have to sign, and I do not approve. Permission denied.
Mike Judge, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What I really like about Hank Hill is that he's this conservative guy trying to make sense of things and treat people with humanity in a world that is just has gone terribly wrong.
yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what's fun is to have the world be wrong and Hank be right, you know, even though he's not king of the world, he's maybe king of his block.
Hank's pals are really a wonderful trio. One's an exterminator consumed by conspiracy theories. Another's a barber in the army with very low self-esteem. And then there's Boomhauer, who you also supply the voice for. And he's kind of this rockabilly type, and he's known for being completely unintelligible. Can you do some Boomhauer for us, for people who are not familiar with his garbled speech?
Yeah, Boomhauer, I'd wanted to do an animated character like this for a while whose accent was so thick that you couldn't follow him. Because there's a guy I knew in Dallas that, especially after he'd been drinking, you kind of knew what he was talking about, but you didn't know what he was saying. And it's also based on a guy who called to complain about Beavis and Butthead, who left a voice message.
That got replayed and replayed and
that I listened to
in the studio.
Yeah, and he was, I don't know if you can say this on NPR, but you could bleep it out, I guess. He thought the name of the show was Porky's Butthole. I don't know how he got that out of Beavis and Butthead, but his phone call, he was saying, I've been calling y'all a bit of month now, grab about y'all every time them dang old Porky freaking old butthole come on. And y'all been jobbing them on dang old commercials on and on every time like y'all do last time, you know. And I was calling a guy for directions once in Oklahoma City and got a Boomhauer kind of guy who's just so, hey, yeah, you know, come on that on that old patch, you know, coming on off ramp, and you turn around and it's going to be right there, you know. And so that's, that sort of thing. He's also, like, I think Boomhauer, I think of him as, like, if he had grown up in Southern California, he probably would have been a surfer for life, you know, and he's one of those guys everybody likes. He doesn't say much, but girls like him and guys like him, you know. He's kind of a good-looking guy, kind of mysterious.
How has the series changed or developed in 100 episodes?
A lot of the characters have developed in a really good way. You know, it's taken on a life of its own, and it's all through just, you know, it's a big collaborative process. There's writers, and I think the voice actors actually have a lot to do with it. Peggy has developed into one of my favorite characters. When in the beginning, it was one of those things where I wasn't quite sure, you know, like, what do we do with her? And I'm not great with female characters anyway, and it just kind of happened. Something, it takes on a life of its own, and it's a grand sum of all the people who are working on it, really.
Peggy is wonderful. She's a boggle champion. She's a lot of skills under her belt. She's a real feminist, too. Self-actualized, even though she lives in Arlen, Texas.
Yeah. Actually, when Greg Daniels came onto the project after I'd done the first draft of the pilot, that was one of the things, you know, saying, help me out with this. I can't figure this character out. And what he did, he started asking me questions about, he's like playing psychologist. He said, okay, describe your mother. And my mom was actually a Spanish teacher in high school and a substitute for most of the time I was growing up. And my grandmother, she had a degree in Spanish, but she's from Montana. She was always writing, and she got published like in Atlantic Monthly, but they were all very kind of like, she got published as this mountain woman, you know, who's writing about they were homesteaders, you know, up in Montana, her family. And so we just kind of started talking. So a lot of that stuff made it into the show. I mean, Peggy's from Montana and King of the Hill, and she's a substitute Spanish teacher. And I should probably be careful what I say here. My mom may be listening. But, I mean, it's not. My mom's actually very different because she pronounces Spanish perfectly, and Peggy Hill pronounces horribly. She's probably closer to my grandmother.
You have kind of an eclectic background. You were a physics major in college. You worked as an engineer, and then you also performed in bands. How'd you get interested in animation?
Well, I've always been interested in animation since high school, and I guess I was just too much of a wuss to actually commit to it ever and to really try to, you know, like, in college, I just thought, well, you know, I don't want to waste 4 years of tuition on a film degree or something, you know, because it just seemed like back then it was all science. You know, if you ever want a job, you've got to have a science degree, and math and physics came fairly easily to me, and so I did that. But, you know, I mean, in the back of my mind, my pipe dream was always to go into comedy in some way. But I knew I couldn't be a stand-up comedian or anything. But you know, I wanted to write and do this and that. But you know, you just, how do you do that? I had no idea how you become one of the guys on Second City TV or Saturday Night Live or anything. And so I finally got the idea to do animation. I just thought, well, when I realized that one person can animate like a 2-minute short, it just takes you like 6 or 7 weeks to do. But then I thought, wow, this is something I can do on my own. I don't need anybody. I don't need to get a bunch of people together and try to do sketches or something. I guess it just took me a while to realize that. But I had always been interested in it, and I've always done imitations and done drawings since high school.
Do you write jokes for King of the Hill? One-liners, gag lines?
Well, I personally don't like doing that, and a lot of times end up having that, and I'm always the guy who kills it, you know. The reason a lot of sitcoms go bad is they kind of deteriorate into every character becoming a smart aleck. Because I think that's just easier to write than to come up with situations where the comedy comes out of just, you know, the characters and observational kind of things, you know. That's actually like I guess it's because normal people in everyday life aren't constantly saying smart aleck comebacks that it took a Harvard Lampoon guy 3 hours to come up with, you know. It breaks the reality of it, and I just don't like that. I lose interest in shows where some, you know, 14-year-old hot-looking underwear model girl says, yeah, the last time you brushed your teeth, there were 5 more communist countries in the world. You know, it's just like, that. I just don't care about those kind of characters. So
that's funny, though, to imagine you killing all these jokes. Does your heart ever sink? At least I should leave one in.
Not usually. Once in a while, if it's funnier than it is unrealistic, then it's okay. And because I've, you know, but on Beavis and Butthead, I remember this, I guess, just because there was a journalist in the room who wrote about it, where somebody had written Beavis saying, yeah, that guy, he's going to have Beavis envy, like a penis envy joke. And I just thought, no, Beavis is not going to, Beavis isn't that clever.
Mike Judge is the creator of the animated TV series King of the Hill. The first season is now available on DVD. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back now with Mike Judge, creator of the hit animated TV series King of the Hill. The first season is now out on DVD.
Let's talk about Beavis and Butthead. For people who don't remember, they were a sensation on MTV, you know, I think over 6-7 seasons in the early 90s.
Something like that. The seasons were, we do 2 a year sometimes, so who knows. Yeah, early 90s to went off the air in, I want to say, 97. Yeah, November 97.
They were quite repulsive 14-year-olds who sat on a couch in front of the TV and made fun of everything. They also ventured forth once in a while to work part-time at a burger joint. I want to play this clip from an episode called Blackout because it has one of my favorite made-up names for a TV drama series, Asbestos in Obstetrics, starring Melissa Gilbert.
Hey, Butthead, what is asbestos?
It's like health food or something.
Oh, yeah.
Tell the commissioner we need that helicopter. I don't care what it costs. No, I'm not chipping in.
This sucks.
Huh?
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Hey, Butthead, what's wrong with the TV?
I don't know. Let's kick it.
Yeah, let's kick it. Let's kick it!
That's from Beavis and Butthead, which aired on MTV in the 90s, produced and created by my guest, Mike Judge. And Mike Judge also was the voice of Beavis and Butthead. Who were these guys? Where'd you call them?
It started out as drawings in my sketchbook, and I'm not sure what I was going for. I hated being 14 and being in junior high, and I remember thinking around that time that I drew them that there are 14-year-olds kind of looked the same then. This was like 1990 or whatever that they did as they did when I was in high school. They were still wearing AC/DC t-shirts, and my high school reunion had actually just happened, and a friend of mine was talking about this guy I knew in high school who's actually very different from Beavis and Butthead. He was a straight A student, but he kind of had a spastic laugh that was it was a little deeper than Beavis. He was sitting in front of the class kind of sucking up to the teacher all the time and laughing at everything the teacher would say, and his laugh was kind of And so I made two attempts at drawing him. I actually tried to draw him like four times, and none of them looked like him, but one, a couple of them became Beavis and Butthead. But they're, I guess they're kind of like, I don't know, they started out as being completely repulsive characters, definitely. I mean, that was the point. Completely moronic. The way I think of it, in the beginning anyway, was I remember, I'm always struck by how out of touch it seems that, people in entertainment and in the news are. And I remember hearing one of these statistics you always hear, like 80% of high school kids in some town couldn't locate the United States on a globe if it wasn't marked. And, you know, the news reporter was shocked. I wasn't that shocked. I was, and, you know, I mean, because I remember junior high, and I, to me, they're like that 80%, you know.
The thing that a lot of people liked about Beavis and Butthead was that they were really stupid, but they'd sit there and they'd watch TV, they'd watch American popular culture, and they'd know it was so stupid.
Yeah, that's what was really fun, was to have, like, also I think when you, sometimes if you're, you free your mind of intellectual matters, a lot of truth can come out that just comes out from some gut level, and that's fun, you know. And it was also like, actually very early on when MTV first bought it, they showed my original shorts to a focus group and sent me a tape of it. And right before mine, the tape had, you know, it's a, like a one-way mirror. You're looking at like 14 mall rats just sitting there watching stuff, you know. It was really funny. They'd show them something like Aeon Flux, which is this really intricate, this Japanese animation style, real, you know, they'd show them really artsy stuff, and these kids would just go, well, that was dumb. And there's something really funny about that, that, you know, everyone's efforts, you know, making these videos and all these kind of high concept things, and just the reality that the real audience is a couple of 14-year-olds just going, ugh, you know. So, by the way, that wasn't the Butthead laugh. That was my own laugh right there.
thanks for clarifying.
That was my own dumb laugh.
You do a lot of the writing, and you're doing the voices on King of the Hill, but you're pretty affluent. By now, after all is said and done, is there a place you go, like the local bar, to you know, keep your ear fresh?
Well, I can always go to Home Depot, hang out there, get some inspiration. I have a thing about grocery stores. I like going to the grocery store. I don't know, grocery stores are like. It's like when I saw Breakfast at Tiffany's and she's talking about how nice it is in the jewelry store, I thought, yeah, that's how I feel about grocery stores. You know, it's all this food. It's all, they try to make it a nice environment, and it really is. So, and the grocery stores in New York always smell like rotten meat, but down here they, and in Texas and L.A., they, I don't know, somehow they managed to make them smell nice. But I got sidetracked there. I actually, the neighborhood I live in Austin is, yeah, it's pretty affluent, but not so much that, it's one of those typical things that's happened in the suburbs where there's like brand new houses and then the old hillbilly guy who's lived there forever is right next door to me. And so I still, you know, I just put gas in my car, go to the grocery store, go to Home Depot. It's not, you know, it's still, it's not like I'm in a castle somewhere. And Austin is, although it's not a typical Texas town at all, parts of it are, you know, it's, parts of it are, you know, there's also lots of artists and filmmakers and musicians, but there's also regular people there too.
Which character on King of the Hill is most like you?
Probably Hank. I mean, people, friends of mine have said that Hank's probably the closest of all the stuff I've done, including Beavis and Butthead, to me. Although my roommate in college insists that Butthead was the closest to me.
Mike Judge, creator and executive producer of the animated TV series King of the Hill. The first season is now out on DVD. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.